I'm Brian.
I'm Griff, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your weekly source for the information and inspiration to start, run, and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace, bar none. And this is episode 184.
Welcome. We're in a bar?
I haven't been in a bar in a long time, Brian. I have no idea what you're talking about.
I just heard bar. I don't know what the nun part was about.
Well, you know about nuns. You're Catholic.
Oh, that's true. Right.
I always wanted to have a bar and call it the Bar Nun.
Bar Nun.
And there's a neon picture of a nun praying out front. Anyway, we don't have that. We have an episode of the podcast, episode 184. And this is a short episode this week. I looked back and the last three or four episodes were almost an hour long. One was just over an hour. And I thought, all right, let's see if we can get away with a 30-minute one. I think we actually may end up being long. It's mostly seller questions.
Oh, fantastic. I like seller questions.
And you get a chance to talk about a program that you've been involved in deeply.
Yes.
The last several years.
The mentor program.
Yeah, and we never talk about it.
No, we don't. And our users should know.
And you know who will be with us later?
Tyler.
Tyler's coming on.
I like Tyler, too.
Tippy Canoe, Tyler, too. Last week on the podcast, when Rebecca was on, she came up with a suggestion. We were doing a special segment on custom label and how you can manipulate data in the downloadable CSV reports to create more columns for your data. And she said, oh, Griff, wouldn't it be wonderful if you did a video tutorial of this? And listeners picked up on it and they said, so when's the tutorial coming out?
Well, you know, we do have the ability to do video.
Well, not so for this one, this is all screenshots.
Oh, we don't, that's true. Yeah.
But for the one I'm planning, we have to go back into our old video studio. It means taking all that stuff out of storage and setting up the lights and the cameras because we're going to do one in a month, sometime this coming month, that'll be taking photos with your iPhone.
We should plan a cleaning day.
Cleaning day?
Well, for the room to get it ready.
It just needs to be decluttered, not clean.
Okay. A decluttering day.
I mean, it looks a little dusty. For those of you who wonder what we're talking about, I managed to commandeer two conference rooms next to each other, put in a control panel window, and we have this little mini studio. We're right now in the control room, and this is where we record the podcast. But behind the glass, there's a whole room where we used to do video streaming for Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook Live. Mondays with Marnie.
Mondays with Marnie. Wednesdays with Liz. Wasn't it on Wednesdays?
It was Wednesday for a long, long time.
Yeah. And the other thing is tax time's coming up. We don't give tax advice except for one thing.
File them.
File them. I can tell you one little bit of tax advice. If you don't think you're ready to file, you can always file for an extension for like in October, October 15th.
August, then October, I think.
Yeah. But if you do that, if you end up owing money that you haven't paid, you'll end up paying interest on that period of time. Yeah. So if it's a matter of just not having your paperwork ready, there's always that.
But estimate and pay.
Yeah, estimate and pay if you can. And in fact, if you're running a business, I think most sellers who are doing this know that the IRS prefers that you send in quarterly payments, estimated payments. And if you're not doing that, you're probably going to end up at the end of the year as self-employed paying more taxes because they tack on that penalty for what you didn't pay. For those of us who get a paycheck, that money's taken out, so we don't have to worry about it.
But as we always say, check with a CPA or your your tax experts.
Right. Don't take our word for it.
Exactly.
You could end up in tax jail for all I know.
I know where our legal department sits.
Glad you do. I've been looking for them. All right. Well, Brian, did you bring any eBay news for us this week?
I have three news items this week, Griff.
Oh, good.
Our first item is a reminder that the USPS rate changes announced by USPS at the start of 2022 go into effect on April 3rd. This year, USPS is introducing what they call non-standard fees that are proving to be somewhat controversial among sellers of larger or longer items.
Like golf clubs.
Golf clubs. Yeah, or curtain rods.
Curtain rods.
The new non-standard fees are additional fees over and above the cost of postage and will apply when a package dimensions exceed USPS sortation specifications and require manual sorting.
That's a USPS word. Sortation.
Yeah. Is it in the dictionary?
No, I checked.
These fees will apply to retail ground, priority mail, priority mail express, parcel select ground, and first class package service. Here are those new non-standard fees.
Uh-oh, gird your loins.
For packages that exceed 22 inches but are not greater than 30 inches in length, add $4 a package.
Jeez.
For packages that exceed 30 inches in length, probably golf clubs here, add $15 per package.
Oy.
For packages that I'm reading the news, I shouldn't actually intone anything.
Yeah, that's my job.
For packages that exceed 2 cubic feet, so that's 3.456 cubic inches, add $15 per package. A maximum of two non-standard fees may be assessed for a package.
Oh, geez, so, you know, if I'm doing the math, it's possible that an item that is more than 30 inches in length and exceeds those 2 cubic feet in dimensions, they're going to see applied non-standard fees of $30 over and above what they would normally pay.
Yes. In addition, there are new dimensional non-compliance fees to consider.
Just never ends.
USPS says an additional $1.50 fee will apply to packages greater than 1 cubic foot, 1,728 cubic inches, or 22 inches in length for retail ground, priority mail, priority mail express, and parcel select ground when dimensions provided are inaccurate or when dimensions are not provided.
So they're going to penalize you for getting something wrong now.
So make sure you have a measuring tape.
Yeah.
Starting on April 3rd, the eBay shipping calculator will automatically factor in the non-standard fee changes to your shipping quote and the shipping charge a buyer sees. For those concerned about USPS and parcel compliance, you might want to read our DIM weight, D-I-M weight reference guide to check package compliance. Links to both the eBay shipping calculator and the DIM weight reference guide will be in the transcript for episode 184.
I thought this would be a great opportunity to point out the eBay shipping calculator. We'll provide that link. If you're shipping something for the first time and it's unusual size or dimensions or weight, and you're not sure what the charges should be, go to the eBay shipping calculator. It's always up to date, and you can compare the three service providers, USPS, UPS, at FedEx for the same product you put in. I always, when I'm testing it, I'll put in my zip code here in San Jose, and then I'll put my zip code in Vermont that I remember, which is 05777. That usually works out pretty well.
And then basically you're going to get a comparison across the three services. And as a seller, then you can choose the one that makes the most sense for you.
Check out the eBay shipping calculator and do read the dimensional weight guide. We'll provide those links in the transcript, of course, for episode 184. What else is in the news?
So also in the news this week, the recent severe weather in the south and east. We're closely monitoring severe storms moving east across the southern U.S. If your area is affected by the storm, please stay safe. The extreme weather may delay pickup or delivery of your shipments. To help alleviate potential impacts on your business, we're providing you with support and protections. You can read the details on the announcement post at www.ebay.com/announcements.
I saw some of the photos of the tornado in Araby, part of New Orleans. Whole neighborhoods just destroyed.
Yeah, and it's interesting, like the tornadoes are kind of happening all over. There's someone we work with through another company, and he's in Texas, and they had a tornado as well.
Yeah.
And it's like kind of unheard of. And finally, I want to update everyone on eBay's efforts to support Ukraine. Our Vice President of Seller Marketing and Experience, Andrea Stairs, posted this announcement. We know our sellers worldwide are resilient and continue to run their businesses through natural disasters, pandemics, and events beyond their control, including the current situation in Ukraine. In support of our Ukrainian sellers, we are waiving their selling fees. We are also protecting them and sellers who ship to Ukraine from late shipment penalties, feedback, and other account penalties. For all the latest information on how we are protecting sellers, please visit our dedicated community page. Andrea also stated, we are supporting the humanitarian efforts in Ukraine by raising funds for the American Red Cross, Nova Ukraine, and Save the Children. Buyers can support these relief organizations through Give at Checkout, while sellers can support by donating a portion of their proceeds from specific items. eBay will match up to $250,000 in customer donations through the end of March. In addition, eBay will be matching all employee donations at a 2-to-1 ratio.
It's good news.
It is
good news. I mean, in a really bad news cycle.
We don't always announce the things that we do like this, but historically, we've always been supportive like this as a company.
And absolutely.
One of the reasons I like working for eBay.
Well, Brian, that's the news for this week. It's time to get to the questions. Like I said earlier, our episode this week is all questions and call-ins. Our first question was a bit of a stumper, so I thought we better ask the expert. When we have a real stumpy type of question and we can't answer it, we go to the expert in customer service, and that's Tyler. So let's ask Tyler. Welcome back, Tyler.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Before we get to our question this week for you, I hear you were able to track down some additional information about the ScanForm availability window.
I was. Our friend Deb in product provided some extra detail. The daily deadline for accessing a ScanForm is 4 a.m. UTC, which is 9 p.m. Pacific.
Okay. What does UTC stand for?
I had to Google it, but Google says it stands for Universal Coordinated Time. And the other important detail is that dates and times shown are based on the shipping date versus the label purchase date and time. The scan form shows a countdown towards the shipping day's deadline.
So that means if I sold 5 things right now and I printed out the labels, but I'm not going to ship them until Monday because I have 1-day handling, the scan form for that is available to be generated up until 9 p.m. on Monday. Pretty cool.
That is cool. But then what happens between today and Monday if you have additional sales? Then you can just reprint it and add
the new... No, you can't. With the scan form, you do a new batch, and that's a different scan form. So once you print out a bunch of labels, that's the batch.
Right.
And you can't add to it. Maybe someday in the future.
So we do a lot of acronyms here at eBay, and it's UTC. But you looked it up, Tyler, and you said it was Universal Coordinated Time. So shouldn't it be UCT?
That's what I thought.
They don't know how to do acronyms there.
Yeah, so what they're saying is Universal Time Coordinated. I assume this must have been from like France or something. And it's backwards. So go figure.
I digressed.
Tyler, speechless.
No, completely. It's apparently the successor to Greenwich Mean Time. And I thought Greenwich Mean Time was the standard. But apparently UTC, Universal Coordinated Time, or Time Coordinated, is the new time standard.
I wonder how the people in Greenwich, what they thought about this.
Well, they're up in arms.
They must be.
They're furious. Their knickers are all in a twist. Well, Tyler, we received a question and we don't have an answer. It's a pretty controversial topic. So we thought, let's ask Tyler. What do you think?
I am happy to oblige.
Okay, I'll read the question. The question is about blocked buyers. It was emailed to podcast@ebay.com by eBay seller Mary, who says, "Hello, Griff and Brian and gang. Thank you for the informative podcast. Blocking other eBay users does not always block their messages. A potential buyer messaged me with demands I felt were unreasonable. I checked his feedback left for others, and a large proportion was negative. For these two reasons, I decided I didn't want to risk doing business with him. I added him to my blocked users list. He continued to send me messages, even though in buyer management, I have don't allow blocked buyers to contact me checked. I ended the listing, hoping that would stop the messages, but no, he continued to message me through the ended listing. I never had a transaction with this buyer and never answered any of his 8 messages. It appears if users start messaging before they're blocked, their ability to message through that listing continues after they are blocked. Is there a way to close this loophole that allows blocked users to message me? Thank you. Mary E. and her user ID is Worthy Bird Store." Okay, so full disclosure, I came to you earlier with this question, and you suggested we test the message system.
I did, and I was the buyer, you were the seller, and I was very interested in your Yves Saint Laurent perfume. Or cologne. Is it perfume or cologne?
I can't remember. You're not getting it because I blocked you.
Exactly. I must have been really rude and hostile. I remember using the phrase neener neener a couple times.
Oh, you said worse than that in your test message. I was shocked, but I'm not going to report you to CS. And then you tried to message me through the two existing channels that a buyer can message a seller. And one is through contact seller on the view item page, and then the contact seller on the seller profile page.
Exactly.
You tried to message me. So what did you discover?
So, Mary, to your question, is there a way to close this loophole that allows blocked users to message me? The short answer is no. Previously sent messages are not removed when a buyer is blocked, meaning they can reply to them and still message you. The block message applies to the send seller a message from the profile page and to the ask a question on an item page, but there is a loophole. A blocked buyer can message a seller by replying to any message sent to the seller prior to the seller blocking them. This ability for a buyer to respond through a previous message is available up to 90 days. And this is the important part, from the last reply or response.
Because that means that the 90-day clock automatically resets back to 90 days for every response or reply to that message thread.
Exactly. And we've asked the messaging team if this loophole is something we might address in a future enhancement or an update to the message center. Nothing to report on that as of today. However, if a buyer is on a block list and persists in sending messages, that would be an appropriate time for the seller to contact customer service and report it for abuse of our messaging system.
So what happens in that case?
The customer service team will review the message, and with the buyer who is essentially, for want of a better term, unwelcome, you've decided you don't want to do business with them, the teammate will take appropriate action. That usually starts with a warning. We believe people are fundamentally good, and if we tell them they're violating a rule, we give them a chance to correct their behavior. And if they persist in that, there's an escalating series of consequences up to and including like removing their ability to access the message center at all. And if they're particularly egregious, just showing them the door.
That's eBay-ese for bye-bye.
Yes, we do that on occasion. For me, philosophically, when I think about blocked bidder list and blocked buyer list, I always think about it as I've had an experience with a buyer, and that's what drives the decision to block them. The only caution I would give Mary is not everyone's always great when they send an email or they send a message in either tone or anything like that. And I don't know what the content of this message was, and Mary probably made the right decision for her business and all, but I would just caution any seller about putting someone on a blocked bidder list or blocked buyer list prior to you actually having a sale or a transaction with that person.
You know, secondhand information, like you read somewhere or you went to one of those notorious sites, which shall be nameless.
In this scenario, she had an interaction. It wasn't a transaction, but there was some interaction which prompted Mary to say, hey, this is probably someone who I don't want to do business with.
And there are some legitimate cases. I mean, you have to go with your own intuition on this.
You don't want to get rid of good buyers just because they're not articulate via email.
Tyler, in CS, do you see a lot of this?
From an unwelcome perspective, not very much. In my experience, the blocked buyer tends to be fairly effective.
Yeah.
People who are persistent after the fact, they're usually breaking a couple of different rules because it stopped being about the item and started sometimes being about being nasty or just trying to, I don't know, get even. But this is a very simple process to review. And it's one that I know that every CS teammate has easy access to. So you're not going to have to call in or get sent to a special team or get transferred a million times to report something like this. It is a fairly easy workflow that can be quickly dispositioned.
Well, that's good. So if a seller does have that persistent buyer who's giving them trouble, you know, the guidance really is contact CS and we'll look at it.
Absolutely.
I got to tell you, in all my years of buying and selling eBay, I don't think anyone's ever blocked me. They might have. I don't know if they have. I've only blocked, I think, two buyers. And one was recently, and it was a buyer who got really nasty in an email post-purchase about the authenticity of the item. And I calmly tried to explain why they shouldn't be worried, and I gave them everything. And they just, by the time the email is finished, I mean, I've been called lots of names in my life on the internet, but these were names I'd never been called. And I thought, well, but perhaps I don't need to hear those again. So I just quietly added. And he is a collector. So I've been putting up stuff since, and I'm curious because there's that side of us all that wants to know. I wonder how many times he's tried to buy something and then realized he can't buy from me. And I wish I knew that. I wish we had a little report saying, but of course, that's not the reason to be in business, is to be vindictive and vengeful, right? No, it's not the reason.
I think something else to consider, one of the most memorable calls I had was actually from a buyer who had been blocked, who was very concerned and called in very upset because she had been blocked from a number of different sellers because she was proactively messaging them to tell them that various items that they were selling had been chipped or broken or were missing pieces. She was an expert in unique high-end porcelain and so was very concerned. And it was a good opportunity to educate about sellers get to run their business on eBay as they see fit and they interact as they with the people they choose to, but then also to talk a little bit about how to use the site. So we talked about how all of these things she had been messaging sellers on were in the missing parts or pieces condition category.
Exactly.
And so it was an opportunity to educate the buyer. She was thinking she was doing everybody a favor because she wanted to have them avoid not as described returns, when in reality, she was pestering someone who had very clearly labeled an item as this is broken.
I just had a do-gooder email me about something and say, your description is wrong on this. And I said, well, I wrote him back and I said, well, no, actually, it is right. And here's why. And didn't hear back from him. But that's the kind of, if you are tempted to correct a seller about something, don't. It's just,
if you're interested in purchasing and you want clarification
there
on something,
yes,
then
correct.
I'd say you can say, I'm very interested in purchasing this item. But if it's just about, hey, you're wrong, Mr. Seller.
If you must do it in the nicest way possible. I mean, just pour on the sugar, you know, something like, I could be wrong, but I'm, you know, I just wanted to let you know, just, I think that this may not be this. I think it might be that, but I could be wrong. I just wanted, you know, to put that out there, but that's all. And have a nice day and you're a great seller, you know, something like that. If you think buyers sometimes get up on the wrong side of the bed,
Are you suggesting our sellers sometimes get up on the wrong side
of the bed? I think our human beings get up on the wrong side of the bed occasionally. But not me. I'm always in a great mood, and I'm always in a fantastic mood every time we talk to you, Tyler.
Oh, shucks.
You know, if you if you just would move back to or move to San Jose, we could, you know, could arrange something. So
I think we have
to get the whole trio together every week.
Yeah.
Yes.
But through the magic of Zoom, we get to do this. So thanks again, Tyler. Let's hope the messaging system team considers a fix for the loophole. Though, you know, I got to tell you, sellers can just ignore the messages. That's my advice to everyone. Just ignore and delete. And, you know, it's like on the internet, on social media, people feel the need to respond. There's no urgency and there's no requirement that you have to respond to everything. You can choose to ignore stuff if you want. Easier said than done.
That's the truth.
Case in point, go read my Facebook page. Okay, Tyler, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me.
Tyler Langston works in our customer support organization, GCX, which stands for Global Customer Support. He's also a regular on Community on Wednesdays for the Community Chat, and we'll have him back again next week.
You got questions?
We have answers. We got answers. We got them.
We got answers.
Hey, would you read the first question?
Gladly. Our first question this week is from eBay seller Diana, who sent this to podcasts@ebay.com. Hello. First, love the podcast and the knowledge I gained from it. Well, thank you, Diana. Wondering if you can help with this problem. I noticed that items I've already entered the item specifics for are showing up again and again in the Add Item Specifics tab. This is even after I check the Don't Remind Me About These Recommendations Again box. I have filled in all the item specifics that I have on the item, so the reminder is just frustrating. I'm also concerned that these items are being suppressed in search. Do you have any suggestions? Thank you, Diana Tate. Red Rabbit Resale. Oh, I like that username.
Red Rabbit Resale.
Yes.
Although it almost came out like Wed Wabbit Resale. Be very, very quiet. We're selling Wed Wabbits.
Yes.
I asked our good friend David with the product team if this might be an issue. And he sent back the following very illuminating reason for why Diana is seeing this. He says, hi, Griffin Brian. Recently, we had another seller mention the same thing. We investigated and found that the system is working correctly. Now, what happened with the other seller is that they had added all of the required item specifics and then some of the recommended item specifics. And then they checked the option to don't remind me about these recommendations again. At that point, the listing no longer appeared as missing recommended item specifics. But this is the part some sellers might not understand. Sometime later, eBay changed the recommendations for this particular listing. Yeah, adding some new recommended item specifics. And in this case, the don't remind me again selection is cleared because, quite frankly, we want to be sure that the seller knows there are now new recommendations. And when they see the alert, they can take another look at the new recommended item specifics for that same listing and see if they are relevant to the item.
So the recommendations appearing are because new recommendations have been added. Right. Interesting.
So now, it's not broken. It's not a broken thing.
But I have a question.
What?
Do we tell them which ones have been added?
No, there's no room to do that.
And we'd have to do it item by item because different sellers are going to use different ones.
Different categories. Yeah. So no, that wouldn't be practical. I think what would be nice is to have a message that says, hey, since you last visited this listing, there have been new recommendations. Maybe it's a bubble that pops up just to let sellers know. So maybe we're just not communicating. And I also took the opportunity to remind Diana that a seller can always hide or move the column for item specifics using the customized table option and active view in Seller Hub. It's what I've done. I don't want to see the recommended anymore when they pop up, so I just hide the column.
But I can see a problem with that.
What's that?
Well, what if we add new item specifics that you actually want to use?
I thought about that, and I thought, well, now thinking about it, if you do hide or move a column out of view for the item specifics, you might want to revisit it now and then just to see if any of the new recommended item specifics have been added and if those new item specifics are relevant to your particular list of items.
That's true.
It's nice to know.
You don't have to do it daily. You can do something that like quarterly or whatever. You can just take a quick look at your listings and see.
One more thing, Diana. If you don't use all of the recommended item specifics, or even if you don't have some of them filled in that are relevant, that doesn't suppress your listing in search. We don't suppress listings. What the item specifics do is they make it easier for buyers to find the item depending on what they're searching for, what they use on the left-hand side for the search filter. Those directly connect to item specifics. But if you don't have them all filled in, that doesn't suppress your listing. And in fact, we mentioned this on the show many times. If there's an item specific that's recommended and it has no relationship to your item, leave it blank.
Correct.
Don't put in NA. Don't fill it in just for the sake of filling it in.
Because then you might actually end up getting someone who buys your item and then going, well, item not as described.
Exactly.
Because it didn't apply.
Right. So make sure they apply and are relevant to your listing. And if they don't, just leave them blank.
It's not in eBay's best interest to suppress items in search.
Yeah, that's not why we're in business.
Our next email comes from eBay seller David, who opened up an old can of worms with this email to podcast@ebay.com. I'm scared to read this one now.
Yeah, me too.
I enjoyed your rundown of space wasting and potentially damaging keywords. What do you think of the word vintage?
Oh
Griff's favorite word in the entire planet. It's the one overused word I have had trouble getting away from. What say you? eBay seller David. You and I have had conversations about the use of vintage in the past. I've had conversations with sellers because of your education of me about the use of this term, because I used to think of it in a different manner than you did. And what say you?
Well, back in the old eBay radio days, I think I went off on a big rant on this. I was channeling my inner William Sapphire when it comes to English and precision. And not that I'm the most precise English user in the world, but this one particular word has always stuck in my craw. And when you think about it, when it comes to describing product, there is no other word that is so subjected to so many and often contradicting definitions. Brian, let's explore, shall we?
Let's.
I did a little research right here.
Let's do that.
Okay, so the Merriam-Webster Dictionary definition of the word vintage says, when it's used as an adjective, number one, most popular, and this is historical, it's of wine, relating to or produced in a particular vintage or year. It can also mean of old, recognized and enduring interest, importance, or quality, like a classic car, a vintage car. Number three, use is dating from the past, just old or outmoded or old-fashioned. It can also be used to indicate the best or most characteristic thing about something, like, for example, oh, that play last night, that was vintage George Bernard Shaw, a wise and winning comedy. That's the examples they give.
Those are some good examples. Here are just three posted examples of various definitions for vintage provided by others on their webpages, and these were just three out of many. From Farm, F-A-R-M, Antiques blog, vintage items are not as old as antique. However, unlike the definition of an antique, labeling something vintage is far more subjective.
That I agree with.
The word vintage literally means of age. With such an open meaning, there are many interpretations. Most antique dealers consider an item to be vintage if it is at least 40 years old. And so in the context of this blog date, a vintage item would be made between 1918 and 1978.
Seems pretty definite.
At least they've provided guidance for how are they using vintage in their world for them.
Well, let's look at another webpage. This is from the Retro Kids blog. And they say, generally speaking, if the item is no older than an antique, but not less than 20 years, it falls under the term vintage. Okay. They say, I've heard the term true vintage as being at least 50 years old. True vintage. Now we're really, you know, piling it on. Interesting, however, the term vintage relates primarily to wine and is an altered form of the French word vendage, meaning the grapes picked during a season.
And another definition from the Cal Auctions website. Vintage. This term has been loosely used over the years. At one time, it was used solely to describe the age of wine, but it is now used to describe any type of item. When we're describing an item as vintage, this means that it is at least 50 years old or more. Many people will say that vintage can also refer to items that are 25 years old, and you may hear these types of items being referred to as new vintage. Oh my gosh, my head's spinning. If you talk to industry professionals, they will say that a vintage item is technically at least 50 years old.
Okay, now here's the dilemma. You just heard three different websites plus Merriam-Webster Dictionary. What is this word defining? 20 years old? 99 years old? 50 years old? This is why, personally, I consider the word vintage to be meaningless as an adjective and potentially dangerous in describing an item without also giving an indication of what vintage the item is, in the sense of the original meaning of the word in winemaking. You have a vintage dress? How nice. What vintage?
Victorian.
Well, that's helpful. I mean, it says it gives at least a window. When was it made? It's important. Don't just say vintage dress. Say vintage 1950s dress. Yeah. This term drives me nuts.
So can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
You were in the antique business for a while. Is that where this came up? And is that why you wanted people to be specific? In specific in how they use the word vintage.
Too many people have a different... They're feeling the elephant in the room as blind people, and they're coming up with different definitions. And the problem with that is the imprecision. So you say vintage, and you think it means 20 years old, and somebody buys it and says, this is not 20 years old. And so that you, what you've done is you're using a term of art that hasn't been agreed upon to what it actually means.
And which can cause confusion to the buyer.
Exactly. And I also know from my history of, and, well, I'm old enough, you know, I was in the antique business starting in the mid-70s. Vintage was not a word that we used anywhere. There was no such word as vintage used. It's, I think, become popular with the internet.
Okay.
And I railed against the usage for so many years. And then one day I woke up and saw that in some of the categories, there was an item specific for vintage that eBay created, at which point I thought, game over. Why do I even bother?
Right, swimming upstream.
The company I work for has now adopted the word with no... It should not be used alone because it doesn't mean anything. And I think to our seller's point, David brings it up and says, it's an overused word, he thinks. But you can't get away from it. Seppi, search eBay on the word vintage and then tell me what you think the word means.
And technically, vintage could mean last year's summer clothing styles.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be 20, 25, 40, 50. Where
no,
the other
I could
years.
Say vintage like, 2000.
Right.
I could say vintage 2019. If you bring it back to wine culture... You know, when a year is over, it's over. We've made the wine. We picked the grapes. We put them in the casks. That's the wine. You're never going to get another 2019 vintage. That's the same thing you would think about with an object. If you want to use the word vintage, tie it to a year. If you can't tie it to a year, tie it to a group of years, like 1950s dress, like 1960s mod clothing, like 1980s members jacket.
And actually, as you use the wine thing, would you actually go in and buy a bottle of wine if it was only described as vintage without a year on it?
If it was a dollar.
Yeah, exactly. But do you know what I mean? Like, no one would. They would say, well, what year was it?
Exactly.
They would want to know the year. Yeah. It wouldn't just be, oh, this is vintage. David, thanks so much for that because it's always fun to see Griff's. I wish all of our listeners could see Griff's face as he reads the word vintage.
I think if you go back and you skip back to the beginning and you listen very carefully, you can actually hear my eyes roll.
Yes.
When this came up. But David, you and I are simpatico. Useless word, potentially dangerous because of its imprecision, and we're both swimming upstream on this. No one's going to stop using it. Anyway.
I hope he gets a mug for that.
A mug? He's getting a jug. And you know what? It's a vintage jug.
A vintage jug. Our next question comes from eBay seller Mike, who sent the following to podcast@ebay.com. Hi, Griff and the gang. I recently listed a pretty pricey AV receiver this weekend and was notified by a watcher that someone in the middle of the country was also selling one using all my photographs. I've reached out to the other seller but haven't heard back or much expect to yet. What recourse do I have? I've included screenshots of the copycat seller, including ID and item number. Thanks, Mike Albaugh.
Yeah, we won't post those, but they are exactly the same photo.
Mike quickly followed up with a second email. Part two, someone using my pics. The buyer contacted me and claimed they were new to reselling and they have ended their listing. Part of me wants to believe that, while another smells that what was being set up by a dropshipper.
Hmm.
If the buyer had ignored my message and kept running with their listing, how should I have handled it? Thanks.
Well, Mike, there is a help page on this topic, the link to which we'll put in the transcript for episode 184, but I'll tell you what it says. It starts off, what should I do if my image, video, or text is being used by another seller? And eBay says, when you create listings, you give eBay and its customers permission through our user agreement to use your images, videos, and product details. Your content may be added to the eBay product catalog and may be used by other sellers in their eBay listings through the catalog. However, you may contact the seller and ask them to remove your image or text if it's not part of the eBay catalog. And usually we'll back that up. So yeah, if we can show that the image was yours. But that's the official stance, right?
Yes, that's the official stance on the use of one seller's images by another.
Yeah, and I've always had a tip for people, like he's selling an audio, video, or AV.
Yeah.
Any electronic equipment is going to have a serial number. Take a big picture of that serial number and make sure you include it, because that's going to mark yours with its unique identifier.
Right. And the other thing is, I assume he was selling brand new.
Well, no, it was used. I could tell.
Oh, it was. Okay. Yeah. So you looked at the image. So in that case, then the buyer or the other seller should be taking pictures of their own item.
Oh, always.
As a used item. Normally, the catalog pickup is when it's a new item.
Right.
And so someone takes photos, they upload it, it's a cataloged item, someone else lists against that catalog, they can use those photos as long as the seller allows it.
And there's sellers who told me that they copyright their photos, and what you can do, and I don't know if eBay still supports this, but you could actually join the Vero program,
right,
and report other sellers as using your photos. But some sellers have done that, but you know, it's up to you as a seller what you want to do. Ask me what I would do in this situation.
What would you do in this situation, Griff?
Nothing.
Really?
Yes, because if the buyer is unhappy with the item because what they receive is not what was pictured, the onus is on the seller that borrowed the other seller's photos. It's not on me. I'm the original photo owner. And as for drop shipping, well, Mike, that would be really, really risky on the other seller's part. For example, if they're trying to drop ship your item off eBay, what if your item sold just after his did? So the buyer's planning on buying his item once he sells it. Well, if it's an auction, what if he sells it for less? And what if you immediately sold the listing to someone else? I mean, this is really risky.
Super risky.
Yeah.
And that borrowing seller would have to purchase the item from the seller of the original item and then request that the original seller send the item to a different address, which the seller may decline.
Yeah, you see where we're going with this.
Yeah. And even if the seller who used the photos to sell the same item managed to pull it off, that is, selling the item, then purchasing it from the original seller and convincing the original seller to ship it to a different address, if the actual buyer then wanted to return the item, well, you can see the resulting mess.
I can. That's why I don't think this is a common practice, Mike, on eBay. It's way too complicated and impractical and really carries a lot of risk. I doubt anyone is actually using this as a business model.
And my assumption is it was a lazy seller.
Yeah, they just didn't want to take the pictures. They will. This guy's got pictures, so I'll borrow those.
Right. Same AV equipment, different. Yeah.
Remember, this is the internet. People are downloading each other's photos, creating memes out of them. You know, there's no sense of private ownership anymore. Yeah. So
you've taken a lot of photos over the years.
I have.
Has anyone ever borrowed your photos without asking?
Yes, they have. I've had other sellers use my photos without my permission, and I've never taken any action. Well, I did chuckle a bit thinking of the potential of their buyers filing a item not as described claim, because almost everything I have is unique, right?
So, right.
I have had other sellers ask my permission, and I always agree, but I always give them a caveat, because I take great photos. You want to use my photo? Be my guest. But let me tell you, so for example, on fragrances, a lot of them have batch codes, which I feature, and if the one you have doesn't have the same batch code, and they rarely do, then their buyer would have a case for filing a not as described claim.
And
but please, I always say, go ahead, knock yourself out. Use my photos.
And do they?
They never do.
Yeah, I bet they do. So we have pretty smart sellers on our site. And a lot of times people are learning, if you're not set up to take photos and you see something, it's not a bad thing to borrow someone else's if it can work.
And it was this reason alone that I want to be able to, in the future, if this happens, say, hey, you should take your own photos, and here's a link to a video that Brian and I actually did for the podcast on how to use your iPhone to take great photos with little or no investment. So I think it's more important to make it clear a lot of people don't want to take their own photos, but it's not as hard as you might.
Fantastic.
Our next question comes from our community forum, specifically from our mentor board. Brian, before we read the question, I think a lot of our audience are familiar with the program. Can you provide some insight into what the mentor program is?
I can. If you go to community.ebay.com, there's a Ask a Mentor board. And generally where those questions actually come from, though, is we have a number of sellers who've been kind of vetted as experts on eBay. They're not necessarily experts on everything on eBay, but they're experts on eBay. And they've been on the platform for a long time, selling, answering people's questions over the years. And we put a program in place over 5 years ago called the Mentor Program. It's actually linked through our help flow as well. When someone's going through help, at the bottom, they have the option to kind of continue to GCX or customer support, or they can ask the community. Mm-hmm. And if they ask the community, then their question actually gets surfaced to these sellers on the community, and then those sellers will answer. They don't necessarily answer everything. You can imagine if somebody comes in and asks a very specific, let's say they got their account suspended.
So,
you know, the mentor's not going to have access to internal reasons to understand why someone had their account suspended. But for a lot of our questions, a lot of sellers, you can imagine brand new sellers with questions about how the platform works or how to get source or how to ship or which carriers to use. There's all kinds of stuff that mentors can help with. And so the one thing I will encourage our listeners to do is check it out. If you're also interested in answering, there's no obligation to answer a certain number of questions a day.
Right. You don't have to. There's no hours provided. It's at your leisure.
It's, yeah. You know, it's Sheila Dockey, who's the community manager and who manages this program. Is we're always adding new mentors, you know, throughout the year. If you're interested, there's a link there in community and apply to be a mentor. And maybe you can, your answer may show up on the podcast.
Yeah, because we're going to start pulling from that board. And the reason why, this is a subject near and dear to my heart. I got started on eBay answering questions back in 1996. And when I go and look at some of the answers that these mentors provide, they're doing an amazing job. Right. And they're doing it because they want to, which is how I started. So I feel a close connection to them. And I thought, you know, I think every week we're going to feature a question from the mentor.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Encourage people who want to be mentors. And if you want to get some answers, you don't always have to just listen to the podcast. Check out the community. There's stuff going on there. There's some smart people.
And the answers that the mentors give are public. One of the things that we look at is we're measuring the program. It's not just, okay, how many questions got answered, but we also look at page views to those answered questions because it speaks to, I think there's one around, like, how do you change your profile picture is one that always kind of gets a bunch of page views for whatever reason. And there's a really good answer. And that means a user doesn't have to ask the question. They can see someone already asked the question and there's an accepted solution there. Mm-hmm. And so they go, okay, that is the answer. I don't need to go search and help or whatever. And they can find this information through our community or even just doing a Google search.
Yeah. So our first question is about a subject that a lot of sellers may not be familiar with. And I thought, well, let's use it. Number one, because it's a good question, unusual. We've never had this on the show. And number two, because the answer the mentor gave was just outstanding. Would you read the question?
Hello. I was looking for advice on if a buyer in another country who used a reship freight forwarder asks for a refund for item not as described. What is the appropriate response? How do I handle it if they escalate it? I understand that there is a clause in the seller protection that if a buyer uses a reship service, it waives their money back guarantee. But does that apply to them initiating an item not as described? Any advice would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah, we should probably just quickly mention what the seller means by a reship or freight forwarder company. I don't know if they're as popular as they used to be in years past, but there are companies that the buyer buys on eBay through, say they're in Japan or some other country, and they buy through this company who is actually the buyer of record, and then that company ships the item to them. The problem is that the buyer is never on record as being the buyer. It's the company who purchases the item. So,
and those companies, sometimes they aggregate, you can imagine, purchases from a whole bunch of people. And that item can sit, let's say, in Long Beach or in Miami for a little while before it ends up getting shipped to the purchaser.
And I think the Global Shipping Program put paid to many of these efforts because it basically does it at no extra cost and quicker. And the buyer is the buyer of record.
Yeah.
So, Brian, what was the response?
So, one of our mentors, Wooden_Flower, provided a succinct and accurate response. And she said, yes, INAD, or item not as described, is covered under the money-back guarantee. So, reshipping voids that coverage. If you contact customer service, they should close the request in your favor. To speak to customer service, use the link and instructions on the help and contact page to work through the automated assistant to get a callback. The time for filing a claim would also be limited to 3 days after delivery to the freight forwarder.
Great, great answer. Every week, I'm going to try to find a really great question from that a different mentor has answered. We'll put the links to the mentor program on the mentor board, at least, so you can see it. Or there's not an actual board.
Well, there is. When you go through the flow, you can see ask. It, we don't put it in the main board flows,
right,
but there is a access to Ask Amender, okay, under community info.
Yeah. So we can put
and
that
you
in.
You could click on that and see the questions and responses.
We're going to end this week's episode with a tip that was called in by eBay seller Trevor.
Hey, Griffin Crew. This is Trevor Davids, a.k.a. Retro Rewinder on eBay and Instagram. Also run a podcast called the Brick and Modem Podcast. I don't really have a question today. It's more of a comment. I was listening to your latest episode, and there was a thing on there about scan sheets. I just wanted to give a little helpful tip that I use. My local post office allows me to take a picture of my scan sheet and bring it in to not have to worry about a paper copy. And it's their scanning tools, machines work just perfectly right off my phone. So I thought I'd give this little piece of advice for anybody else that doesn't like dealing with printing paper. Especially when we, run our business with mainly shipping labels, it's a little hard to actually use a shipping normal printer at times. Just thought I'd give that little piece of advice. Thanks.
Well, thank you. That was a great tip, Trevor.
It was a great tip.
And I never really thought about how, why even print it on paper? If you take a photo or a scan or save it as a PDF, you can just bring your phone in.
Right.
And they can scan your phone.
Sounds like he's been doing it. So there's no pushback from Postal Service. That's a really good tip.
Anyway, scan forms. Boy, that was a lot last week. I hope a lot of our listeners got some information out of there and they start using them. And scheduling pickups, why waste the time going to the post office if you can just have the post office come to you?
Agreed.
And give them a scan sheet. And you can spend all that time you've been worrying and dropping off parcels at the post office, creating more listings.
Listing, responding to customers, taking photos.
Yeah. Brian, that's our episode this week. A whole episode of Seller Tips and Questions. Such fun.
It sure is, or sure was. If you want to join the fun here on eBay for Business, call us on 888-723-4630.
Just like Trevor did, because we love phone calls.
Yes, it's great to hear voices.
Oh, it is. You know, we should adopt different voices for each email we read.
Oh.
You know, we can do a whole character range. But we're not set up for that. We'd rather you do the voices at 888-723-4630. Of course, you call that number any time of day, any day of the week, and you can leave a question or comment. And just like we did for Trevor, we'll put it on the air.
And if you're not a call on the phone person, you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
It's time for your weekly to-do list. First, keep an eye every day on the announcement board for up-to-date seller news at www.ebay.com/announcements.
Bookmark the eBay shipping calculator page and check it before you list an item so you know you're giving either your buyers or yourself the best shipping deal for your particular item.
And a podcast is an audio thing. It's hard to visualize links and it's hard to write them down when you're listening and driving. That's why we put any link we mention in the episode transcript so you can follow up at your convenience. To reach them, just go to ebay.com/podcast. Find the episode by number and click on the transcript tab. You'll see all the links on the top and you can read through the transcript for more information.
And we'd like to thank our esteemed colleague, Tyler Langston, for helping us out again this week. He's great.
Oh, I know. And we'll be back next week with another episode. The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.